This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 6, Cheeky Run Competition. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, a mystery from Mark Garraway. He's got a cheeky way of getting some extra runs, but he's not going to tell us about it. So we want you to tell us about it instead. We also answer a couple of other questions. One about not naturally gifted cricketers improving, and one about a young bowler who's having a little bit of trouble when batsmen start going after her. Listen in to find out our answers on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching better cricket, to playing better cricket, and better cricket all round, no matter who you are, no matter where you are. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And joining me from Millfield School today, as he usually is, it's the Director of Cricket Coaching there, it's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
How are we all?
Very good, thanks. Are you having a good week there so far?
Having an exceptional week, actually. Yeah, it's been really good. Really good. We've got a couple of players away with England over in Dubai playing against Pakistan. We've got a few players away with their counties on academies and training with the professional ranks in this week. But the intensity of the practice has been amazing. You know, normally when you take your best players out of an environment, that you see a dip, but it's been the complete reverse. Everybody else has raised their game. It's been brilliant. So yeah, a good final week before we have a break.
Well, that's interesting that they are everybody's decided that they're going to take up the slack. It's nice to see that, because it doesn't always happen, does it?
Well, it doesn't, and we made a little bit of a point at the start of the week. I sent an email out effectively saying that normal people would take their foot off the gas in the last week, because we do see that happen around the school, you know, educationally and in other sports. But if we're doing it, if we're taking our foot off the gas, then probably everybody else is. So if we keep the foot on the gas, then we get an extra week on most people. And they've responded really, really well.
Also joining me is the other regular on this show. It's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. Have you got your foot on the gas there?
Yeah, boys are doing really well, actually. Really happy with them. Just planning our half term, which is going to be a busy few days, but lots of opportunities for the boys to do some extra work if they feel they need to. And it's good to see that almost all of them have taken up the opportunity. So yeah, everyone's booked in for extra work over half term, which is great.
That's really good news. Now, I wanted to follow up on an article, Gareth, that you did last week around a drill that had been come up by a couple of coaches at Millfield School, based on the work of a strength and conditioning coach, and it was to do with bands and spin bowling drills. It's a very popular article, and we had a little bit of follow-up from it on the Twitter, so I thought it would be worth talking a little bit about that and getting your thoughts on this drill in general, and also the process of developing a drill over a period of time, from coming up with the idea to honing it as you go along. So let's start with the actual drill itself, Gareth. What was it?
It was a drill sort of building on the role of the hip in spin bowling, really, and how you can build kinesthetic awareness and build that general awareness of what that hip does. So by having somebody with a band, it could be a TheraBand. In our case, it wasn't a TheraBand. It was one of the strength and conditioning bands around the thigh, with somebody holding on to that band behind you and creating enough resistance. It means that the player, the bowler, has to drive their leg and their hip through, up and through, in order to get that feeling and get of the hip coming through, but also to get the ball down the other end. And it's something that we do with players who don't get their hip square at point of release, or beyond the square at point of release, which is now proven to be the more optimal position to get your hips into when you're trying to get the ball to rotate off the pitch. It's a really good drill, and it's something that we've done with fast bowling a bit to facilitate that back leg drag through that pyramid that Stephen Jones talks about. We've adapted it to get it through to spin bowling, and it's had a huge effect. Not so much on that lad that I actually pictured doing it, because he's got a wonderful hip drive anyway, and gets beyond square when he releases it, which is really exciting. But to two or three other spinners in the program who weren't doing that through a variety of reasons. They might have been blocking themselves off at the crease, for example, and they found that they couldn't actually drive that leg through if they were blocking themselves off. So one of the technical transitions that they made without any intervention other than the band was actually to open their feet up a little bit so they could actually drive towards a target rather than having to rotate around their base and therefore not being able to get the hips all the way through. So it's a great drill. It's something that we've had a lot of success with. It builds on the principles which is coming out of the ECB research into spin bowling, and it's having good effect where we are presently.
It also, it seems like a strange thing to say because it's not founded in any research or anything, but it also doesn't look right when you see someone with the hip trailing a little bit, does it? I'm thinking particularly a young spinner or a club spinner who doesn't put a lot of revs on the ball, and you kind of see that hip trailing behind, and there's something in your head that as soon as you see it, you think that what's going on there? There's something that doesn't look quite right, wouldn't you say, Lavis?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that's probably more commonly found in leg spinners who are closed off because they're pointing a slightly different direction. But if we're looking for transition through the crease and looking to get our momentum continuing towards our target, that back hip doesn't come through, and ultimately that back knee and back foot end up hanging out behind the bowler and often to the side because they're closed off, which is one of the potential causes, then it doesn't aid what the bowler's trying to do in any way. As is starting to come out from some really detailed research in a number of different areas, a lot of things that people have believed over the last 30, 40, 50 years are now starting to be questioned, which is brilliant. We're questioning things that we use every day, and a lot of the things no doubt are being backed up, and some things like this are hopefully being challenged.
Speaking of challenging things, I think it's very healthy to have a discussion about any training method to see if A, you can improve it, or B, you can pick holes in it, and what you can do to change things around and develop that. And that's exactly what we got on Twitter. We got some feedback asking a question about the way that the back foot lands. How did you interpret that one, Gareth?
Well, first and foremost, Flinty and myself played cricket together for Hampshire for a number of years, and we've been mates for a number of years. So I suppose, because of that relationship, I knew exactly where the challenge was coming from, and it was coming from exactly the reason why we challenge each other on this show, for example, which is to get better understanding and to find out better answers. So first and foremost, I took it as an appropriate challenge from Flinty, because he's an absolute legend and a bloody good spin coach to boot as well. So that was the starting point of it, really. And he's done a great job with a number of spinners, some of which are playing international under-19 cricket now down at Hampshire. So, you know, a huge amount of experience. And what he was challenging was, I suppose, the notion of the loss of torque that could be created. And torque being the disassociation of the hips and the shoulders and the sort of the working against the hips and the shoulders, which ultimately generates torque. What I was saying was exactly the same thing. It's just that the position of the feet is different from what has been traditionally coached. Like Sam has just said, you know, we're finding out things that maybe challenge some of our conventions now. And Darren's talking from what he's done as a spin coach, which has been very successful. And in most cases, spin coaches, I'm not speaking for Darren because only he can do that himself. But in most cases, your feet will be sideways in the delivery stride to square, and your hips will be square at point of release. But what we notice is a number of spinners aren't able to actually get their hip to be square at release. The ECB have looked at their conventional methods of coaching and questioned the fact that in 25 years of coaching, which is pretty much the length that it's been around, we've only produced one spinner of note who's gone on to take more than 200 wickets in that period of time. And of course, that's Graham Swann. And if you track Graham Swann's history back, then you'll see that actually Graham Swann did his own thing as opposed to actually going through the system as such. And as a result, took a while to come from an early start where he did well through to world domination where he ended up And also what they did was have a look at his bowling action and some of the conventional spinners around the world and what they did. And they noticed that his back foot, when it lands, is slightly open, which facilitates his hip to be slightly open when he lands on back foot. So in his delivery stride, his right hip wasn't sideways, it was slightly beyond sideways. And as a result, he was able to then get a full 90 degree rotation into point of release, which took his right hip beyond square when he let go of it. And as a result of that, he was able to keep contact with the ball for longer, have a slightly later release position, and as a result was able to produce all of the things that we saw on a regular basis from Swanee, from his test debut when he got two wickets in the first over all the way through to his last few tests. So that was where they went with it, and I suppose that's new information. I'm very lucky to be privy to it because of my coach education background and the conversations that I have with some of the people that are leading this research, and probably I've introduced it a bit ahead of time, I suppose, and as a result you expect to get challenged, and Flinty challenged me quite rightly. But you don't lose torque, because actually the hips and the shoulders are doing exactly the same thing. It just means that the starting point of that rotation is slightly different, which actually facilitates more people to be able to get square at point of release or even beyond square. And as a result, they spin it quite a lot. Interestingly, the lad in question on that video, bowling, I showed 12 coaches him bowling and just his action. So I didn't let them see the ball bounce and what it did. So I did it from the front, so he bowled over the top of the camera, and I did it from the side, put it next to each other, and I asked them to watch it five or six times over and over again. And I asked every single coach, is this guy a guy who basically rolls it out the fingers and doesn't get any spin, gets a medium about spin, or gets a lot of spin? And all of them said he's a roller. And that's because our conventional view of how we develop spin bowling is flawed. That is it, because they looked at their model. He didn't weigh up at all against it. And as a result, he must roll the ball out. Well, actually, he does the complete contrary. He's gone to India. He's got 13 wickets in 5 games. He spun it more than any Indian did when we were over there, and he did it with control. He's a very exciting prospect.
Well, that's one to get your head around a bit. It's hard to do over audio, isn't it, Gareth? In that, you know, we're talking about things that are much easier to show, I suppose. So maybe we can at some point to show those things as well as talking about them, because it's a fascinating subject. And if it's an area where we can have a discussion and make improvements, it's going to be an important area, isn't it?
I hope so, because there's nothing more exciting to me than watching bowlers bowl blimmin' fast and spinners spin it a lot, because it then raises the stakes in the game and batters have to come up with different ways of doing it. And ultimately, from a strategy point of view, that's exactly what we want to see when we're watching a game of cricket, whether it's on from the sidelines or whether it's on the television. We want to see that battle where people are having to come up with different things. So I want to see more spinners spinning it. And the research that's coming out and the practice that we're beginning to put into place are very much making a difference to what happens when the ball hits the ground.
Time's ticking on, so let's move into the yes-no round. That's 3 questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. Bear that one in mind, Gareth. I'm in charge of the question, so here we go. First question. There's a drill for that.
No.
No.
Second question. Simple is different from easy.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question.
No.
too soon. Third question, New Zealand will win the World Cup.
No.
No.
Okay, let's go into some questions now. These have been sent in by listeners to the show. And a couple of questions that we read out and try and answer during the show, we pick a winner, which is a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the first person who sent in the question is Emily. And Emily says, I'm a 15-year-old girl and I've started playing my first season of rep cricket. We play a lot of 2020 games. I usually start off bowling well, but as soon as I get hit, I find that my mindset changes and so does my confidence. And I start bowling a lot of loose deliveries. What do you think I should do to try and keep that positive mindset that I had at the start of my spell?
Right, well, really good to see a 15-year-old girl taking this really seriously. We don't get as many questions from girls as we'd probably like, and given that girls and women's cricket is becoming a massive part not only of international cricket, also school cricket here at PGS, but no doubt in Millfield and other schools around the country, it's good to see them really taking the extra step and looking to get some real good information if they can. One of the things I would immediately say is, how do you measure your success as a bowler? And it looks like you're measuring your success by the runs that are being scored or the shots that are being played. And actually, you're measuring your success by assessing someone else's ability. So I would change that and go back to the basics of what we want to do as a bowler. If you've set yourself an objective, which is to bowl a particular line and a particular length, and possibly bowl with some degree of speed and an amount of swing, then put your focus on yourself and control what you can control. And don't gauge your success by the outcomes generated by other people, such as the batsman. So if you're looking to hit a foolish length on the stumps, outside off stump, wherever it may be, then gauge your success and try and take your confidence from whether or not you've executed that skill. If you have executed that skill and subsequently runs have been scored, you may want to evaluate your process in your plan and maybe speak to your captain or speak to someone else who's seen you inside and say, actually, I don't think I've made the wrong decision. But I think it's key to separate your skill and your ability to execute your skill from the outcome of the batter and as well as that from the plan that you've got in place, because it's key to identify where you need to improve. Are you landing the ball where you want to? Yes, your skill doesn't need to improve. In landing the ball in that place, has that been effective in the game situation? No, in that case, maybe your tactical plan has to adjust. So that would be my first point. Have a think about those points and work out how you're measuring your success.
Well, firstly, I think that's a brilliant answer from Sam. Absolutely outstanding. And so my challenge now is to add even more value to it. My view is perspective, really. And it sort of links into where Sam came from. You know, what happens in 2020 cricket is going to happen. You know, you're going to get hit every now and again. And if we go in with an expectation that the first over is going to be replicated three times over, then we're probably, we're not going to meet our goal, because with every ball that you bowl, people get used to you either on the sidelines or the batter that's facing you. So it's going to become increasingly more difficult. The other thing is to concentrate on different skills. So you know, I think Sam sort of alluded to it earlier, but at that point, is it not an opportunity to show off different skills within that game context? So it could be, once you get hit, that you change your focus from hitting line and length or whatever it is that you've started with to go into slower balls and Yorkers and see it as an opportunity rather than a problem. And those are my two things, perspective and opportunity.
Coaching mindset is a real tough one, isn't it? Because you have to find the right words to say to something that's going to resonate with them. And the words that you say to one person might resonate with them immediately. And the words that you say to someone else, they will think, well, he's just talking a load of old nonsense there. I don't know what he means. So but you can't really, unlike with a cricket skill where you can see what's happening, you can't see what people are thinking. So it's much more difficult to coach, isn't it?
It's incredibly difficult to coach. And that's where, I suppose, the relationship that you've got with that person and your understanding of that person enables you to go to the right words a little bit more. And as I've said before, you know, on this show and many times otherwise, people have verbal signatures that give you an insight into the type of language they prefer to have. And when we're talking about mindset, if we go in with the right language, then we're going to probably have a more immediate effect of that person letting them in. Because still, when we talk about mindset and psychology, it's still, I wouldn't say it's taboo, because I think we've gone past that stage, but it's also an element that people don't necessarily work on as much as, say, you know, being able to bowl a Yorker or be able to bowl a slower ball. So we have to choose the right words with each individual, but the better we listen, the more we get the understanding of what that right word or what tense we need to put things into to get the desired response.
And that's something levers which you learn over time, isn't it? You can't really, there's no shortcuts to that, is there? You just have to work with people and learn the ways of other people to get your head around how to best do it.
Well, I guess it is really. It's always nice to have shortcuts, isn't it? And ways that you can suddenly absorb a new skill very quickly or take on a new manner very, very quickly to enhance your performance, whether it's as a player or as a captain or as a coach. But it does take a little bit of time. I think there are probably similar to physical skills. Certain people have a certain affinity with developing at a different rate. So some people maybe do pick it up a little bit quicker than others, and some people really struggle to change their ways and change the way in which they approach their conversation. But yeah, it'd be great if there was an on-off switch and you could just upload a new manner of speaking. But unfortunately, it's generally something that takes a bit of time and a bit of focus as well. So again, it won't just happen over time without working on it and thinking about it. You've got to really put some good thought and attention into how you're going to develop.
I think the easy thing to do, Sam, is to try and change somebody straight away, isn't it? Before you really get to know them. Because we always want to affect change. We always want to help people out. We're very well-intentioned people as cricket coaches. But sometimes it's better to stand off and just try and gather as much information on that person. And one of the best skills we had, as I said earlier, is listening. And that does require time. And it does require us to have a focus, which we don't always have. We can't always have, can we? Because we might have four people talking to us at once, or we might be in a crowded room, or whatever the case may be. So take your time, because it's about the quality of our information and our quality of our input and our quality of our interactions rather than the volume of it. So, it is a patient game, but I think the biggest shortcut to it is creating the opportunity for yourself to listen.
Next question is from Mark. And speaking of coaching, he says, I have a team which is full of enthusiastic yet not naturally gifted cricketers. There's a bit of code in there. Many have started playing in their late and mid-20s. Aside from fielding, what would you recommend I should focus on to get them in a position to enjoy the game more and put us in a position to win more games?
I'm going to offer running between the wickets, because it's something that people don't practice very often. It's something that can gain you 20 runs in an innings if you get really good at it, and something that really annoys the opposition. So running between the wickets, not just the physical element of it, but the decision-making element of it, which, again, we don't see enough of. So that would be my focus. If you've got an enthusiastic team and you're looking for, people talk about 1%ers. To me, this is a 10%er minimum. If you can come up with a system of running between the wickets, a system of calling, if you can get the two people that are batting together to communicate ahead of a ball being bowled, where the one areas are, and if the ball goes in there, we just go. So it takes the grey out of any calling. If we always say, make a choice to, if I come down the wicket and hit it the mid off, we're going. You know, that these sorts of things can make a huge difference. If we start picking out fielders that we're going to run to, it's fantastic. And the great thing about all of this is, whilst two people are doing this out in the middle, the rest of us can be on a balcony or on the sidelines planning ahead, how can we make this more effective? And within time, you find that it's unbelievably successful in trying to get, you know, 10, 15, 20 more runs than most games of cricket, particularly when you've got enthusiastic people, like it sounds like you have, will come down to those margins anyway. So that would be my one thing that I'd bang up to you.
I think running between the wickets, as you said, is so valuable and often overlooked, yet ultimately, people have to realise that that's our currency, that's what we're working on. And batting is only a process that gets us towards runs, really. And if we don't go and learn how to run and how to identify opportunities to run, then the batting and the value of the skills you develop as a batsman is less significant.
It's good fun as well to practice that. It gets you out the net, doesn't it? It gets you doing something a bit different. And everybody likes it when they can be challenged to work out ways to hit the ball more often and then make runs from how you've hit it. So it's a good way to mix up just saying, like, everybody, let's just have a net today.
Well, it is, but also I think you can get some real satisfaction. So, you know, where are the opportunities that you can pick up a run that no other team would do? So establish those. And we had a couple last year which were cheeky, right? And not against the spirit of cricket, but they were cheeky. It always got the biggest cheer because we're always looking, players are always looking to see whether they could be the person that gets the cheer. There was one thing in particular, which I'm not going to talk about just in case we play against Sam's team in next year. Which is absolutely fantastic. And again, it's within the laws. It's not even bending the laws. It's just something that sides don't do that they should do. And we had 7 instances in the first team last year of it, which all got bigger cheers. And when somebody smacked one out of the park, it was absolutely brilliant. But it becomes a focus and it keeps the enthusiasm bubbling under the surface, ready to come out.
And I guess if it's something which... what I'm hearing from you, Gareth, is that it's perfectly legal, but it's maybe slightly closer to the line than other things.
No, it's not at all. It's just that nobody does it. Oh, it's okay. Not closer to the line at all. It's just that nobody does it. They always wait for the next thing to happen as opposed to going when the first thing happens. And that's all I'm going to say because I know that lavery and I know how tricky it is.
I tell you what, let's make it a competition to anybody listening. If you think you know what this might be, then send it in to us and perhaps we'll give an extra prize to someone who gets it. Not open to anyone who has been involved in any Millfield games. Where
I was going to say, if anybody sends in with a millfieldschool.com email, David, you need to tell me who it is. All right, because that will be the last time that they play. They'll be banished to tennis.
Well, there's nothing worse than that. What about bowling-wise? I guess, is there anything we can throw in there on the bowling front? I mean, the basics of hitting line and length remain important in whatever game you're playing, don't they?
But again, coming back to our value being runs and how we score them, and Gareth saying having an idea of how you score your runs or pick up your runs and run between the wickets, I think how well can we do very simple things to associate our fields with our bowling deliveries? If we can... even if we're not particularly quick or we don't particularly do a lot with the ball, can we get a basic, can we develop a basic ability to put the ball in a certain area? That doesn't have to be specific, but can we pick off an area that then allows us to dictate where our fields are going to go and where they're going to hit the ball? So can we improve the link between delivery bowled and field set? And I think so often we can do. I see so many games, specifically at school level, but also in club cricket, when I go over from our first level and watch the threes and fours play on the pitch, which is next door, and I'll see the opening bowler coming in, and there'll be three slips in without fail from the opposition, and ultimately the relationship between the field being placed and the ball being bowled isn't particularly strong. So, if you can look at how you think you can bowl or how you know somebody can bowl and link your plan with your field, then, again, it's going to limit the opportunities for people to run between the wickets and limit the opportunity to score runs.
Soapbox time now. And what that is 60 seconds on the clock. A little bit like the good old BBC Radio 4 Just a Minute programme, where a debutant got hit through 60 seconds without pausing or hesitating. So there's a challenge for you, Gareth. 60 seconds without pausing, hesitating, umming or erring about a cricket-related topic. Over to you.
Well, I'm going to say David Tennant's name because he did it really well the other day. I heard that on the radio. Second thing that I will say is I had the pleasure of being in a lecture by a swimming coach here at school. Runs the program here at school and also was part of the England swimming coaching team at the Commonwealth Games, and he talked us through that experience. And one of the things that he talked about was the golden moment conversation, or more precisely the golden 15 seconds conversation, and this is where he would speak to his athlete ahead of them going into the pool. And he only gets a short period of time and he has to get it right. And it questioned me, really, do we utilise our 15 seconds or 10 seconds appropriately as a coach? and who's done the best ones. And I've written about that this week on my article. So anybody that's listening to this and wants a good read, then slide over to my article and read about Jolyon, and you'll enjoy it.
And after that piece of precision from Mark Garraway, it's time for us to head off back into cyberspace. Before we go there, we're going to decide on a winner of this week's competition, which is, of course, the prize of the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had a question from Emily about keeping her head while the balls are being smashed all over the place. And one from Mark about his enthusiastic yet not naturally gifted cricketers. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
Well, Mark had a head start for me just because he's got a great name. However, we are encouraging women and girls cricket. We want more women and girls to be writing into the show because we want to support the development of the game. And Emily's question was also a fantastic one. So this week's winner is Emily.
Well done, Emily. Take advantage of that online coaching course and improve your bowling. And hopefully we'll see you making great strides in your cricket career in the future. Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to send in their question to us, boy, girl or otherwise, what would they need to do?
Well, they could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can also find us on Twitter at PitchVisionAcad is where we are there, and on Facebook, facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. If you want to listen into this show every week, and you can do so by subscribing in your favourite podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer. A lot of people use iTunes, but there's plenty of other ones, things like Overcast and Downcast. And if you want to do it in the old school way, then you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for details of the RSS feed. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labours.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.